comment about going back to the balance of male and female, and then your comments about the self-portraiture. I think you've always seen that in the gay community, in our attraction to drag queens, because I think we're seeing our female side in these strong women, even though they're men, but they're hopefully enacting this act, you know, this woman figure in a really theatrical, flamboyant way. And that's why, you know, we feed, it's like this dialectical energy between the crowd and the drag queen. So if you've ever been to a good drag show, you know that it's, you know, we're reflected in the drag queen and vice versa. Or why a lot of gay men are attracted to like really strong, powerful women and that female energy. Because why, even though there is sexism in the gay community, but you know, those of us who are not afraid to embrace our feminine side, you know, that's where you see these bonds between, because people have asked me why, what's this dynamic between the strong female heterosexual woman and this gay man, you know, that bond, and I think that's what it is.
So. That's really interesting. You know, that is very interesting. Because I haven't read people writing about, you know, the drag show in that way. You know, there's a lot of ways that people try to talk about it. That's very interesting, but not what you just said. That's really interesting. Thank you. Yeah. And I think it goes, you know, in both directions. I mean, I'm thinking here on my feet, right? It's like, you know, the attraction that women have, you know, heterosexual women have for men that are comfortable with their own sexuality, and therefore can allow women to be comfortable with their sexuality too, when straightness is also an artifice. You know, the strictures in which we are taught to think about what it means, because I'm speaking as a woman, are very artificial, you know, and they're very limiting, and they're also caricatures. So, you know, it's very, yeah, it's a lot.
I had a question that touched on something that he brought up about your writing about, like how you write about this stuff. And it had to do with the concept of that you talk about with the disfrazismo. And the idea of floricanto, how some things can only be expressed through poetry or through art. And one of the struggles I'm having is in trying to describe an experience, like what you're talking about here, in an academic setting. And I'm finding that it's very difficult because you're right that some things you can't quite say, well, this is what happened, or this is what was expressed, or connect. Like, even if you put things in conversation with each other, it doesn't quite express what took place. So I'm wondering if you could talk to the challenge of doing that, because you've written about all these works that deal with that, and you're writing in an academic setting, you know, or you're writing in an academic way, cultural studies way. How do you approach that, trying to articulate something that you, from the beginning, you say this is, you know, this is not something you can actually articulate?
Well, I guess that a lot of things come up in response to what you're saying, and one of them is that part of what we also, you know, part of what we have to decolonize, you know, as scholars, right, is how we speak. And it's an ongoing challenge, you know, because if you're writing a book, like I was, the first of all, I wanted to reach the artists, you know, but I also wanted it to have an impact, you know, in the university, to help decolonize all those fields, right, that are very Eurocentric still. And so, for myself, that was a decision that I saw clearly in an open-eyed way. What that meant then is that my writing had to have a lot of footnotes, had a lot of documentation. The first draft that I ever wrote of one of the chapters, I wrote it poetically because it was really important for me to try to perform, you know, to perform poetically as a way to disarticulate, you know, the kinds of, you know, certain kinds of academic, we all have to sound, like feminists are saying, we all have to sound like white men, you know? And so I tried to perform something different. And I found that it was very, very up here. It was too poetic and not scholarly enough, so I had to have like a reality check. This is for me, it may not happen to you guys this way, but for me, capitalizing on that, this is not your book of poetry, face it. This is a piece of scholarship. And try to be experimental, you know, try to be performative and conscious of what you're performing and the authorities and the way you're writing and who can understand it and who can't. I try to think about those things because I think that's very important. I don't think we should, I think we have to change the way that we talk. For some of us, it's going to involve some untraining. But I belong to the school, like when I studied poetry and my teachers told me, before you break the rules, you need to know them. You know? So I definitely belong to the school. We should know the rules of whatever game we're trying to be in. And then with authority, with confidence, and hopefully virtuosity, we break it. You know? So, but I think that is a really important challenge for our teaching, for our writing. That's part of how I believe we are going to transform the university. So I think that writing, even in a scholarly way, can't help but to also be creative. But how creative it can be, I think we should take it as far as we can. I have written an anthat. I published a poetic anthat. The way I organize it is an anthat. This book is organized as an anthat. It had a real big impact on the way that I conceived of things. I think also for me that I gave myself permission to speak and write about the kinds of things that I did, you know, quoting. For me, politically, by the way, while I resisted my friend who wanted me to quote all the big shots, all the European romantic big shots, I did the opposite. I made it a point to try to read as much Chicana, early Chicana feminist work, and to quote it. You know, I made it a point to do that. So that was part of the politics of living my Chicana feminism. You know, honoring and giving, you know, voice to the people that came before me. And I'm sure there's a lot of people in this, but I tried it. So I think that sometimes we do feel uncomfortable with academic writing because it is about a specialized language. You've heard this a million times. It is specialized, you know, so it's going to require a certain amount of specialized language. But does it have to be so dead, right? Does it have to be so boring? Does it have to kill you so much to get through it? I don't think so. And I'm the kind of person that I think, like, so how come I feel so bored and dead and silenced and frustrated? That's really political. Maybe that's what I'm supposed to feel, disempowered and silent. And so these are very important questions that you're asking, and I struggle with them all the time. And I actually took out a lot of the highly theoretical stuff that was in the book, and then I read it over right now, and sometimes there are parts that are hard, you know, even for me to read through, and I feel badly. I think, oh my God, this one's still like a big knot, you know? And so I hope that it'll get, like, more readable, you know, in my writing, and in that way, that it can circulate in a more general way. But this book was not, I knew the pictures were going to circulate generally, that I knew. But in terms of the arguments, because I put everything I knew, and my big guns came out to make my arguments. And so I had to do a little bit of, you know, talking in that way in order to do that. And so different books will have different projects. Many audiences, and so on. I just have to figure out how to do it. It feels better to write in a more simple way, and that means something. That says something. So, other questions? No, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you mentioned like writing in a more simple way. In a way, isn't it like you're just more honest, you're more directly connected to what you're writing? Because I'm not sure this makes sense to you. I just want to write feel. You can write in a certain way.
Right.
Like a love poem, and like writing a legal document. It's just too different.
Well, right, except that if your head is there, and you're like, your head is like in philosophy, and you're thinking all these bad things, that's how you're going to write a poem. It's going to sound like that, you know? Because there are poets that are really abstract, you know? So, yeah, but it is about trying to write in an honest way, I think.
Earlier you were saying that you, at first, you felt that you weren't able to do this because you felt that you didn't have the knowledge enough to go ahead and do it after you did all the research and talking to a lot of artists. And but how, going back to your arguments, how did you develop your arguments? Well, that's pretty much my question. How did you develop your arguments when you first weren't sure whether you were able to do this, very early stages, of course. So then how did, you know, all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, but how did the arguments come about after that?
Well, when the whole first issue of spirituality came up, I felt like I wasn't equipped. I felt like I'm not doing it. Forget I'm not equipped. I'm not doing it. And but yes, you take for granted it's because I wasn't equipped, but also I just knew it was going to be on my feet, right? But what happened is I did a lot of work. I did a huge amount of work to really, really try to understand spirituality, try to understand visual arts. I did a huge amount of work. It's a huge bibliography. I did a lot of work. And so I tried to cover all my bases like a maniac, you know? So I did a lot of work. So it was a voice of insecurity. It was like, oh no, I still don't know enough. There are like five more books that I haven't seen somewhere. You know, and I haven't looked for it. So it was that voice, that disempowering voice, you know. And so when I wrote the first piece, which was kind of like the heart of my book, theoretically, it's theory, the heart of the theory is spirit voice. I worked on that, just putting the arguments together for months and months and months and months. Because I was chiseling it, because the thinking was hard. Because I was doing something I hadn't done, and I had no sources that were making those kind of arguments. For me, there was so much that was doing that, and it wasn't easy. And it's like other things, you make things, you throw them away. I threw so many things away in that first chapter. So it was a very creative process of being willing, and it was hard work. Thinking is hard work. Sometimes thinking comes like an inspiring poem, but sometimes the reason it's hard is because it's not articulated yet, because it's a creative process of recognizing what other people haven't seen yet. You yourself haven't seen yet. So you're kind of on your own. And that process is a process of going to the drawing board back, going to read something, seeing that inspires you, listening to music, having a conversation, coming back, reviewing, and saying, that's crap. Or saying, that's not really it. And as a writer, it's very nice to be a thinker and a writer, because looking for the right word is about, do I really mean that? You know, and so like you were chiseling with words, but we're really chiseling with ideas, right? And that's what it is. So it was about just, you know, I felt I was saying something and I wasn't really getting a lot of response from the academic world, and I didn't know how much more armor I needed before I ventured out to speak. You know, that was my insecurity. You know, have I argued it enough? Is it convincing enough yet? You know, so the arguments. It's hard to describe. It's like it's having an intuition and not knowing how to describe what it is that you're thinking, and it's trying to think about it, saying that's not it, and going back and thinking about it again, and that is really okay. That is really okay. And editing, you know. You're not going to throw it away. It doesn't matter. You'll come back and write it again. It's very, very, I think it's a very creative process. And eventually you'll know if you think you made your argument in a way that really describes what you're talking about, what you think you see. And so-and-so will help you put this piece together, so-and-so will help you put that piece together, and then you bring them together. By the way, my reading was very interdisciplinary. Very, very interdisciplinary. Very far-flung. And I trusted my intuition on that. Whoa, look at that cover. There's something in there. I read really widely to bring pieces together, and I had to give myself permission to do that. So that's just how, you know, all of that reading, that whole community helps you, you know, thinkers and artists help you put the arguments together. Just trust your intuition about what it means.
A lot of questions, but one, the politics of spirituality, and you clearly laid that out and grounded that, right, in a very material way. And the other part, I'm just curious if you found the need to even make a distinction or teach out spirituality, emotion, mm-hmm. and sentiment, because to me, when I think of spirituality, or I don't know why the little boxes that you said, these are like the miniature altars,
yeah.
box, with the little things that mean something, emotional meaning, mm-hmm. to me there's so much sentiment in those. I don't know, do you see connections or needed to think about those or not?
I didn't think about those kinds of things. I think that when I look at a lot of artwork that it has, you know, like when it's writing or different kind of artwork, that it does deal with emotion, you know, or desire, you know, things like that. And so in different pieces I might have talked about that. But in terms of connecting it to spirituality, and like maybe what some people talk about as a religious sentiment, I'm not sure that's where you're going. I didn't know where you're going.
No, no, I was kind of not religious, but sentiment, just like you put some buttons in a box that came off something your mother wore, something that kind of a sentiment.
Oh, the things are like the meaning. Yeah. Well, you know, Patricia Rodriguez talks about that in her, when she talks about her gafas, she talks about, for example, one of the gafas she made, she bought it because the guy who was selling it was the brother of a man who had owned it. You know, he ended up in jail, and his sweetheart is just making fun of him. And so he tells, for her, just to begin her project, that was part of the history of that box for her, even though she didn't really know these people. And she went on and tried to make a piece about that, to honor the life that was attached to that. And it's an emotional life, right? So in that sense, some of the artists were called up those kinds of, you know, observations and all those pieces were about, because the artist pointed that out, you know. Clearly in Kathy Bacchus' case, she writes about how her mother's death and the death of some of her friends impacted a lot of the work that she was doing. She was able to post the images. So I had to do with real things, not just with, oh, I think the ghostly images, you know, memory in the abstract, but they're connected to real people, to real stories. Just, I think it comes up in different pieces. It must be time.
Is it that time? I know.
Just wanted to say something. I didn't say anything about it yet, but I do want to say something. Just, you know, speaking for myself, you know, as a visual artist and the community of artists, I think that the book that you created is such a labor of love and meditation and thoughtfulness, and the way in which you engaged with all the artists, and really just the caring and the scholarship that you put into this work is so valuable on many different levels. So I just want to thank you so much for the work. It's just, such an important piece of work, and really I feel honored to be a part of it. But just in terms of the community of Chicano artists that have been really trying to articulate all these ideas in their work for so many years, to finally have somebody with the insight, intuition, and intellect to be able to also interpret and connect and just really respect the work, it's just, you know, really wonderful. So thank you.
Anyway, I do hope that your own work, you know, similarly inspired by what you think is powerful and real and valuable, because the last place to waste time is academia, because it can be so solitary. And yet, that's what, in a way, that's what the state wants us to do, to waste time doing projects that are important. And it's depressing, because everybody has to do stuff that's valuable and important, no matter how small someone else can think it is. We have to think that what we're doing is valuable and realizing our purpose on the planet. And so, I really hope that for you, that all of you are doing that work and that you know inside of yourself, you're the first ones to validate yourself on working on what you think is important. And you will find a community to join you, and that will validate and enrich you. So it'll happen. The block will come out to join you.
And you have done that. I have. I want to just commend you, Laura, for your work. I haven't read the book yet, and I'm excited to do so. Since he read the introduction, Tomas read the end, I'll start with the middle. But you're amazing. So I just want to
say
I'm honored to hear and see you, and now I will understand more when I read that.
Thank you.
I just want to share with you that you are so inspirational to me, and my work that I've been doing for the past 10 years has to do with what you're talking about, and it legitimizes it even more so hearing this. And I just want to say I'm grateful to all the scholars and that you've done this. Thank you.
You're welcome. The community, they all put it together. I'm lucky to have been able to write this, and I really couldn't have without all the community that came before us. The Chicanos, I couldn't even say the word Chicano, right? If it hadn't been for all of the teachers and the activists, who did that work. And so it is a good thing. We are still part of this community, and it's still working through us. We all have, each and every one of us has our own piece to play in this. And so it's good. We have to share it. We all have to put it out there. So I look forward to all of your work.